We're good.
Great. Well, also welcome to everybody. Looking forward to this chat. Tara is one of the real leaders out there and stars that's kind of forging the path for the rest of us. And we've all learned a lot from Tara and people like her. And so this is something where we want to get into the trenches of, you know, one is convey how, you know, the water's safe, come on and jump in. At the same time, go through the realities of, you know, change is change. There's always challenges, lots to learn along the way. And for those of you who were in Chicago the last couple of days, you know, one of the things that I mentioned is, you know, it's incredibly easy to buy really cruddy benefits. It's more work, well worth it, and we're gonna hear, but we also want to be sober about, you know, what are the challenges internally, what are implementation challenges. So we're gonna go through that and have, first of all, Tara introduce her prior role, which we're gonna be talking about. And then we'll go through just kind of how she got through it. What was the journey like? What were some of the things that were keys to the success? How she got people on board? What were some of the potholes and roadblocks along the way that I'm sure there were some? It's gonna be a pretty loose conversation. So we'll see where it goes. But why don't we just start out with the introduction. Tara, if you could describe kind of your past role and a little bit about the organization and the plan and, you know, where you're located. And so people get kind of a general sense of that would be great.
You bet. Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me. I'm a big fan of Health Rosetta and Dave and Sean and everyone involved. So I was excited when they reached out to do this webinar to share some knowledge with all of you. But I am based out of Madison, Wisconsin. Have been in the HR world for the past just over a decade. Prior to that, I was in the sporting industry, so took a shift in career in a good way, and became really energized and engaged, actually, in regards to benefits, which is kind of crazy for a lot of HR professionals, I would say. But the company I was at was called Palmer Johnson Power Systems, and it was a family-owned business. I'm very good friends with them. I just left in February, so I can definitely speak about the journey that we were on together. But Craig Parsons, it was solely owned. There's one owner, which is super helpful. I say I had a leg up because he's a triathlete. So that was helpful because he believed in wellness. Industrial distribution company. So half of the employees were white collar in the office, sales, marketing. But the unique challenge is half was blue collar. So actual service technicians on the shop floor, warehouse men. So it was unique because we had both blue collar and white collar, which can be a challenge in itself. And I can speak to that as, you know, as we go on. But so solely owned family business, been in business for over 40 years. And what I quickly realized when I got there was our health insurance costs were rising out of control. So there were a few things. I would say it was a 5-year evolution. So don't get me wrong, this doesn't just happen overnight. But I quickly realized our healthcare costs were rising to the point where it was going to be unsustainable. We had 3 unexpected deaths, and 2 of them could have been prevented. So that was definitely the burning platform, I would say, that started kind of the shift. So we were a fully insured healthcare plan. Dave, is that okay background, or did you want anything else before I move on to a little bit of the history?
Yeah, no, that's good. Go ahead and take it away. Give a little bit of the journey on.
Yeah.
I think you were on a good roll there, so go ahead and keep going. Okay. On sort of how, you know, obviously you assess the situation. It's a burning platform. So yeah, keep going.
Okay, awesome. Just want to make sure. So we had, like I said, 3 unexpected deaths. 2 of them could have been prevented. They were very, very sad. One was a heart attack. Actually, 2 were heart attacks. 1 was a cancer. So we had started doing health risk assessments on all of our employees because a large majority of our employees were male and they didn't go to the doctor really unless they absolutely needed to. So we started doing health risk assessments back in 2008 already, so that we knew at least once a year they had a baseline of what their health looked like. And that actually prevented many things from progressing, and they had their year over year results. So that was a good kind of, I would say, benchmark or baseline data for us. But we were just, it was our number two spend on our P&L, healthcare was. It was growing like crazy, outpacing general inflation by 2 to 3 times. And we kept getting, here's your 10 to 15%, you know, 15% increase in your fully insured health plan, and had no data. There was nothing we had to fix that, or to realize, okay, what can we do to really make a difference? And 69% of all personal bankruptcy is because of healthcare costs. The scarier part is 78% of those people actually had health insurance. So we knew we had to do a really good job of educating our employees for financial well-being. And that was definitely part of the plan. But we looked at all of our options, and we didn't have the right. So number one first step for us was, did we have the right broker on board to take us from a fully insured plan to a self-funded plan? And we did not. And we quickly assessed, I realized that right away, and we went out to RFP, and we found a broker that really specialized, or cared about, I should say, they specialized in self-funded, but they were actually willing to roll up their sleeves and help us with that process, because, you know, it doesn't just flip a switch overnight. So I'd say number one was we had to make sure we had the right broker on board. And we actually made a shift as our plans evolved, because our broker, we outpaced our broker, and we wanted creativity and to be ahead of that innovation. And we are very risky, I would say, and willing to make some of those moves where some businesses wouldn't be. So we actually had moved away from a broker that just didn't fit us anymore from a cultural fit. So, and I can talk more about that in a minute, but it was an evolution. So in 2020, let's see, that would have been 2014 was when we made the shift from a fully insured to a self-funded plan. And then we built on the platform. We implemented a standard-based wellness model. So with those HRA scores, the healthier you were, or the more you improved your score by the prior year, the less you paid in your health insurance premium. And we included spouses in that. So everything we did from an educational standpoint, we included the spouse. And whether it was open enrollment or webinars or mailings to home, we really, there's only so much you can do with the employee. And if you don't have that spouse on board, you can do everything you want in your power for that employee and leave that spouse behind. It just doesn't work. So I would encourage people to bring your spouses along the process for the clients that you're servicing, and get creative. Then we added, the next year we added condition management, and that was a game changer. So people had to, if they fell into one of the four conditions, they had to be in a condition management program, and follow suit with the nurse. So you can imagine, for a blue collar population, going from fully insured, not having to do anything but just go to the doctor when you were sick, to actually having skin in the game I don't want to say a culture shock, but it helped with the leadership team on board, Craig being a triathlete, and us educating. So the biggest education points for us was, hey, we're all in this together. The less we all pay in premium, the better, because now we're a self-funded plan, and we all have skin in the game. And we also have an operating profit bonus, where half of the operating profit goes back into the company to be reinvested, and half gets paid out to the employees, which can make a big difference. Healthcare cost makes a big difference in regards to how much of that operating profit got paid out. And actually, just this past year, the company went to Vail, Colorado, based on that operating profit, but based on the dollars, that was strictly a savings to the health plan. So it was it didn't happen overnight. And I can talk about, you know, Dave, if you want to move into or ask me questions about war stories or how we got there, the pros, the cons, I'll let you kind of take from here.
Why don't we, you're hit, getting on this a little bit, but why don't we jump to the end a little bit and then go back to
sure.
the story. So maybe come to the end. Okay, so we've had so, you know, so much success that I'm aware of that in addition to, and you can talk a little bit about what's happened in terms of employee profit sharing and what people are taking home. But then, you know, we, in addition to that, from what I understand, what you're just saying, the company took all the employees out to Vail for a trip, all expense paid, with a portion of the savings from healthcare, which is pretty cool.
And actually, the whole trip was paid from our healthcare savings.
Yeah.
And that was the message. So that was, that was pretty cool.
and Vail's fun. That's a great place to go. And so why don't you hit a few of the kind of endpoints? You know, what did it mean in terms of rough savings? Did your costs go flat? Did they go down? And what happened? Mm-hmm. And kind of where are we at now, roughly? And then let's go back to some of the you know, bumps in the road.
Yeah. So from a cost standpoint, it's amazing. So had we stayed on a fully insured, it was at an 8% trend that I would typically look at. So if we stayed fully insured to where we are right now, our costs would be three times higher. So, $1.5 million, and now it's running like $500,000, let's say. So, I mean, talk about a significant impact in dollars to the bottom line. And that's now money that they can reinvest in the employees, pay to pay in actual pay their actual salaries, and then bonus dollars as well. So it was a significant decrease in health insurance costs. And I think that hopefully that will continue to trend that way. It's continually been trending the way, and I would say we had the right broker in place, and that model, what I absolutely loved, David Contorno was our broker, and I actually met David at a self-insured health conference in Atlanta, and knew right away, I was like, this is awesome, this is the guy, because he's innovative and creative, and he's going to push us, and that's what we wanted to continue to evolve the plan, but we set up a performance-based pay for him. So the better our plan did, the more and more savings we had, the more we paid him. And it was such a win-win relationship, because he had skin in the game, wanted to see us evolve and do really good things. And it wasn't based off of this fully insured model that I get a percentage of that commission. So if your plan costs go up, I make more. We really wanted it to be a performance-based plan, and we're lucky enough, again, that I met David, and we were able to implement that. So that was really somewhat, I would say, unique, but it worked really, really, really well. So the plan's still running great today. The best part is people are healthier and people are happier, and that's really what it comes back to, is do people like where they work? You know, the happier employees are more productive employees, which means happier customers. And that was kind of the concept, one of the concepts behind it.
Great. And you may have mentioned this and it passed over me, but about how many lives are in the plan?
Yeah. So right now, there's about 100 employees, so not belly buttons. Let's just say it's 100 employees. So at the trend that we were trending, it'd be like $1.5 million if we were fully insured. And right now, it's about $450,000 is what it is annually. It's crazy. So, wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
no, that's a heck of a reward. So. But I'm sure it wasn't without its challenges. And, you know, you talked a little bit about employees, and of course there's a change there. But if you were to sort of pull out kind of the maybe two or three of the biggest things where maybe you either questioned the decision or you're like, well, this is good. I still have faith that, wow, this is a pain in the rear that we're having to deal with. What would be those two or three things that kind of jump out at, you know, that, you know, if you were a man, you would have been losing hair. Cause challenges for you.
Yeah, I have plenty of those. So first of all, our original broker that we chose, they steered us towards the wrong TPA, so third party administrator. We did this twice with our old broker and said, we want to meet with all the third party administrators out there because we just don't feel like this is working really well. Not sure about reporting and getting data, and just we didn't have a good feeling about how they were, that our TPA was running. So said we wanted to see everyone. Well, they showed us everyone here, or not everyone. They showed us a select few TPAs here in Wisconsin. And so the first time around, it wasn't the right TPA. When we switched to David, I said, David, I don't care where the TPA is located. They could be in freaking Europe. I'm joking, but they could be anywhere. And that is when we started traveling. My CFO and I traveled the country and went to select TPAs and interviewed them and realized we found the one for sure that we wanted to partner with, because they had everything that we needed, medical bill review, reporting, claims management. I mean, it was a no-brainer for us. So when we picked the wrong broker, we picked the wrong TPA. So that was a lesson for us, was, okay, we need the right broker who knows exactly what our vision is and where we're going, and finding us the right third-party administrator to come on board. So that was super important for us. We bombed on a condition management provider. It was a TPA that recommended who they partnered with for their condition management program. And it was sold alongside the TPA, and it was super unfortunate because the four conditions that we were managing so well and had a 98% compliance rate, we moved to this other program and we lost, and they were not managing it. They were not holding the employees accountable to the steps that they needed to do to be able to keep their standard-based wellness model, to keep their premiums right. And we lost major credibility with our employees for that program. So then it's like starting backwards from the foundation again. When we finally found the right condition management provider a second time. So the vendor relationships are so important. I would say probably 30% of my job, I was the head of HR. Maybe even 40% of my job revolved around, honestly, just our self-funded health plan, because I had to manage, there were 10 different vendor partners that I had to manage, and it got to the point where at some weeks it was a full-time job, and to make sure, are we picking the right solutions? Are we vetting these out right? And that's where David, the broker, came, he came in super handy because he knew what worked and maybe what didn't work. But I would say the third lesson learned is you can't just copy another company's plans or ideas. I mean, I think we started, our original broker said, here, this is what one of our employers is doing over here. And they gave us that, and it just did not work. We kind of had to go back five steps and start over with the foundation of our mission, vision, and core values, and then how we tied it to kind of the health insurance plan. That was a lesson learned. There was one other thing I was thinking of that I was going to say.
If it comes back up.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Do that, but I'll just add a little thought. As I see the evolution of benefits consultants, benefits advisors, I do think that particularly the ones that we're working with, we're sharing this collective wisdom of the different vendors and whatnot, and so that everybody's able to draw on that. And so I think where things are going, I think the benefits advisors that really will win in the long term are the ones who have an intimate understanding of their particular customer. And what are their priorities? What's the nature of their workforce, the geographic challenges, whatever it might be, there's a lot of nuance in different organizations. And then, okay, I have these set of proven building blocks I can build around. And you know, really what we're all doing is taking the building blocks people like you have helped prove out in the market and then saying, okay, well, how do we actually get these to work together well? We were talking, in fact, a couple days ago about a lot of times you have these different independent vendors, and we're going to call it recipes of how you actually connect two or three vendors to work together. So you get that, you know, 1 + 1 = 3 or 11 versus, you know, 1 + 1 = 0, you know, which sometimes can happen where, you know, healthcare as an industry is really lame where everybody blames everybody else. And you know, that's got to end. And so, you know, that's what we see doing. So, yeah, that's great. Good lessons learned. And again, if the other thought comes back, just jump in.
Yeah.
But you talked earlier, about the importance of education. And so probably that's a good entry point into what were the things that if you go back, say these were the key success factors of why this ultimately happened, because you could have the right building blocks and it could still fall on its face. So what you did in terms of education or management buy-in or whatever that really set the table for this success?
So from the beginning, when we moved from a fully insured plan, we were thinking about going self-funded. We started the education process right away. What does it mean to be self-funded, right? And explaining the difference between a fully insured plan and a self-funded plan. We would do, I'm trying to think, we had monthly, every month we had a meeting, and it would be broadcasted nationwide because we had employees down to Texas, out to California, and all the way through the United States. So every month we would talk about how is our plan running? Where is it at to date? Are we above claims, you know, projections, below claims projections? And we are so transparent. And I mean, obviously we didn't violate HIPAA or anything like that, but so transparent on those, on our costs. And not only the cost because of the operating profit bonus, but the health of our people. So, and every year that we did our HRA scores at, on average, every year our total employees and spouses, we did it for the spouses as well, HRA scores went up. So last year, I want to say it was, I have it right here, our lowest HRA company average score was a 71, and that was in 2012. In 4 years, we saw a 9-point improvement, and it to an 80.1 was a score. Tobacco users got cut in half. So that went from 36% of our population to 13% of the population, which was a game changer. And what we did was, if someone used tobacco, they automatically got 30 points off of their health risk assessment score, and they had to pay what we call the silver premium, which was 35% of the premium, or I'm sorry, 35% of the premium. So if someone wanted to smoke, that was their choice. They were just going to pay more in their premium. And that change alone cut our tobacco users in half in a 2-year period. And then 35% of the population was in an extreme or high risk category for weight. And that decreased by 12% in like a 3-year period. So the cool part is the proof is in the pudding. You know, what are the metrics? What do the numbers look like? And so not only were we saving big time on our costs and the premiums, what employees were paying in was we were getting healthier as the population's actually aging. So that was so fulfilling, I would say, to see happen. And like I said, it doesn't happen overnight. But our employees really liked it. So how did we get people on board? Education was absolutely key. And every all company meeting or every monthly meeting, we talked about our health insurance plan. We just made it an absolute priority.
Did they?
Hello?
Did they think it was a little weird to be getting all this information? I mean, most people that yeah. are working for a company are pretty much in the dark on this and think there's just some magical source of money for healthcare dollars. How did they think about that, you know, and where they go, well, why am I getting asked to you know, join this education thing? Why don't you just, you know, pay my, you know, BUCA thing and go away?
Mm-hmm. So that's where I go back to the burning platform. I'll never forget to this day when I was at the third funeral. Right after that, the next morning, for one of our employees, right after that, the next morning, I think, or shortly the day or two after, Craig Parsons was like, "This is our owner." Was like, "This is enough. Like this has got to stop." You know, I never want to go to another employee funeral. For a really long time. And we made the commitment that day, said, okay, we are going to emphasize this, because our number one core value as a company was we care about our people. So we tied everything back to we care about our people. And that's really how the messaging strategy started. So yes, the burning platform was the employee desk, but the core value that we always went back to day in day again was we care about our people. And we want to help our not only our employees, but the spouses and the families to be healthier so that they can obviously live longer and lead productive and happy lives. So the messaging strategy was all around that. And employees got that. I mean, they to see, you know, the owner, I remember when we first rolled this out, he was crying because he felt so bad about these employee deaths. And people, you could feel that. I mean, you knew he definitely cares about his people. I mean, there is no doubt about that. So I think having that message strategy really helped in the communication around it. So it was all about going back to why we're doing this, why, and then the what's in it for me, right? You have to think about it. And we always thought about it from the employee perspective. The what's in it for me is, besides being healthy, you're going to pay less in your premiums, less coming out of your paycheck, which is great. Then we can give you more in your salary, or we can use those dollars to create a really fun, cool working environment and culture. And that's exactly what we did. I would say the other change piece of it, Dave, is early on, how do I put this? In companies, a lot of times the HR department, hopefully, or people sitting around that management team level, leadership group, or just supervisors and managers in general, know who the, I don't want to say pot stirs, but you have back channels of communication, right, at a company. You have back channels of communication, the naysayers, like, oh, this is never going to work. We knew who those people were, and we got them on board early, and we said, hey, you know, do you have any goals that you want to meet? Like, I'll give you one example. There was a couple of people that wanted to quit chewing tobacco. Well, we gave them those resources. We gave them the program. We paid for that program to do that. So, and we would do that for anyone, actually, to be honest with you, but we tested it and piloted out certain things with, I would say the hard people to bring along, and it worked really, really well. And if their peers could see that they were kind of buying in or making changes to themselves or personally, then that spoke volumes. And then it just grew from there. And then you have more people getting excited. And I mean, we had so many different wellness initiatives, but we didn't force it. We actually didn't force it upon people. We said, when you're ready, you let us know and we'll give you anything and everything you need to support you in that journey, whether it's losing weight or, you know, quitting tobacco use, whatever it might be, we're here to help you as a company, and you just have to raise your hand. Because we didn't want to force it on people, because then they just thought, oh, you know, and a lot of them weren't ready and didn't want to make those changes. And some people took a year, some people took 2 years, some people took 3 years, and some people never raised their hand. But I think as a result of that, is how we got to keep continually see the numbers work and people become healthier.
And maybe a few nuts and bolts in terms of the things that have driven the savings. You know, the common things that people are doing today, you know, range from direct contracting, reference-based pricing, transparent pharmacy benefits, you know, primary care, centers of excellence for like high cost things. What did you see have made the impact so far? And when you left, what were the things kind of, you know, on the horizon that they still haven't really done yet that they want to do?
Sure. So we did have a transparency tool. We had a condition management program. We did, we have three different RX programs. So RX and Go, RX Manage, and there was one other through Tether Health. So the prescription drug savings alone that we saw made a big, big difference. The health risk assessments are still there. The TPA is still there. The TPA did the medical bill review. So that helped for anything over $5,000. That saved a ton of money for our plan. That was a little bit of a game changer. That's another reason why we switched to the TPA that we did. And then with centers of excellence, we utilized centers of excellence. So we went to the Oklahoma Surgery Center. We sent people there, which was awesome. I mean, we'd pay for all the travel and the whole, you know, everything, because it was so much more cost efficient. I actually had an employee who had a shoulder surgery and just did it through the regular network shoulder surgery. And he used all of his PT visits. He contacted me and said, "Hey, I need my other shoulder done." But he's like, "I'm out of physical therapy." Well, ding, 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 right away, I'm like, the Oklahoma Surgery Center. So we sent him there, and the outcome was awesome. He only needed, rather than 40 sessions of PT, he needed 8 sessions of PT. And rather than paying $40,000 for the one shoulder and all of his PT, I think it was at a total bundled price of $7,000 from Oklahoma Surgery Center. So firm believer in centers of excellence from not only outcomes-based, but cost savings as well. So I would say the only thing, what was on the horizon was looking at reference-based pricing. We had talked about it for the past 2 years, never ripped the Band-Aid off and went strictly to a reference-based pricing model.
Great. And so was, obviously you were doing the thing with the surgery center, but otherwise were you just renting some PPO network for the other things?
Yeah, correct. So Madison's somewhat unique. We have a self-funded cooperative here. So it's a self-funded cooperative of employers. It's called the Alliance, and it's based out of Madison. So for the population here, we were in this cooperative network. For everyone else, we had a national carrier. So we were looking at doing more direct contracting. It's a little harder to do when your numbers are lower, I would say, with as far as the mass population, because we're scattered throughout the United States. But looking at certain direct contracts as well.
Great. Probably, you know, time for another question or two before we open up to the broader thing. One of the terms I throw around is FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. It's one of the classic methods that those who are trying to preserve the status quo use to, you know, obviously protect their own income. Mm-hmm. And if you think about, like, what was sort of the biggest piece of FUD, the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that was thrown your way when you were thinking about making these changes, either somebody in the community or when you left the broker or, you know, whatever that you heard? And then, you know, was it just easy to kind of brush aside, or, you know, how did you kind of get past that? You know, and it might have been your own fear too, for that matter.
Yeah, I think for us, it was an internal fear, honestly. that we all needed to wrap our heads around as a senior leadership team to move in the, to go to from fully insured to self-funded, especially because here in Madison, it's so HMO driven. I think it really took us, because our brokers were like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. I mean, I think it took us to, I don't want to say take a leap of faith, but in a way, take a leap of faith. You know, I talked to so many other HR leaders out there, and they're not willing to take that leap of faith until I don't want to stereotype. There are a large amount of people from the HR world that they're totally fine, fully insured. They're totally fine with it. And until those health costs keep raising and raising and raising, where that CFO is tapping on their shoulder, like, hey, what are you doing to manage these costs and these claims? What are we going to do about this? What is it going to take to move this forward so that we can, we're not, you know, paying an arm and a leg. Sometimes that's what it takes, is that CFO or that president to realize the healthcare costs are running just out of control. So I always challenge those HR leaders and any HR leader I talk to take a look at it. And yes, change is hard and it's not easy, and it's an evolution, but you have to be willing to try something. Because otherwise, you know, if you become unmarketable, and you're what's going to happen is it's a employee's market out there. The unemployment rate's so low. So if you don't have a competitive benefits package, hey, of course there's other things. You're gonna lose your employees, and it's going to be hard to recruit new ones.
Great. If you could maybe wrap up with, if you could just give one piece of advice to, you know, a business leader, HR leader, somebody who's in that fully insured context, what would be that one piece of advice that you'd start with?
I look at it as being in that role and in that seat, you have the power to impact your employees' lives and their families' lives. So what are you going to positively do from that seat, that HR seat at the table, to make it an awesome work experience, a great culture? Because, you know, I always say people before profits, and the profits will follow. So what can you do to make a difference? And I hate to say it, but healthcare is a big chunk of P&L. So, you know, looking at that and just try one thing. I always say, just try something. It's not going to happen overnight, but make sure you wrap your arms around a really good broker, because there are many out there that are fully insured, and don't ever even bring up self-funded. So I think pushing back on your broker to educate an HR professional on what is self-funded and what does it look like, I think is a good first step.
Great. You know, I think every organization I've been in or heard from says some statement like, our employees are our most important asset. And, you know, frankly, the status quo benefits plans are damaging that asset. You know, they are doing severe financial harm to them, and the outcomes are miserable. You know, I mean, it's pretty, I mean, obviously my last book was all about the opioid issue, and that's just one of many issues. Where, you know, that's a self-inflicted wound by our healthcare system. It's not like polio or HIV or something like that. And so the status quo is not this innocuous thing. You know, we know that depending on which figures you look at, preventable medical mistakes are either the third or fifth leading cause of death. And, you know, when you look at places like Surgery Center of Oklahoma, they're very transparent about their complication rates. Things like that. So hats off to you for really living that, you know, not just having to be lip service, you know, about the whole, our employees are our most important asset. Well, protect that asset. And I think of it as a form of stewardship that really every business leader has to, you know, make the most of that. So again, thanks again. Ellen, why don't you tee up?
Can I say one last thing? I knew that we had. I knew we made an impact in people's lives because I would hear from employees and spouses and the thank yous that you get. It's so fulfilling, and it made my heart so proud to make such an impact on employees' lives and their families' lives. What was super cool, last year we were recruiting for a specific position, and I remember sitting, and it was a higher level position that we were in the final interview stages, and I was sitting in the interview, and I said, what is it about Palmer Johnson that makes you excited and want to work here? And he said, honestly, so it's your wellness plan. It's your wellness model. It's all the benefits that you give, because we showcase it on the website heavily. And he knew someone else that worked in the company. And he said, I've been smoking for over half my life, and I want to quit. So he's like, I think your company is an inspiration to me. Not only do I have the technical talent, but you are the type of people that I want to be with every day. And sure enough, 3 months later, he quit, and he had smoked half of his life. It was one of the coolest stories. So when you can impact your internal people, but the external people looking to come work for your company. So that was really fun.
Yeah, no, that's great. And yeah, I heard a story from another HR leader that was around this time of year, and they had just come back from a football game, and this family surrounded them and gave them a big hug. He's like, that had never happened in my HR career. And it was basically because of the benefits plan that, if they had, they didn't take away the old PPO plan. But if they had gone through that, path, because of the dad's, or the father's, surgery, they would have had to declare bankruptcy, and instead they didn't. Mm-hmm. And he said it was just amazing. That moment alone made it all worthwhile. So thanks cool. for sharing that story. So Ellen, yeah. I think there's a few questions. So why don't you tee those up and look forward to hearing them.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first one, Tara, how did you practically handle having multiple locations and classifications of employees, blue collar and white collar?
Sure. So there were a few things that we did. At a leadership team level and a management team level, we had a person at each one of those locations that was the head person, so to speak. So we got their buy-in first, because we knew that they were going to be the ones fielding all these questions. And if they didn't have the information, we were in deep trouble. So we did a really good job of educating those managers that all the employees kind of fell down through at the external locations. The webinars that we did monthly was broadcast via Skype. So, and everyone was on those. So everyone's hearing the same message. But anything we did that was going to be a change first, we went to our management group first and said, hey, this is what we're thinking. What do you think? Because when you stop giving the managers information and start and kind of cut them out, they're going to start acting like employees, right? Not managers. So we were getting their buy-in was important. We also had a grassroots, well, I call it wellness committee. I don't really like the wellness word, but well-being, fun, culture committee, whatever you want to call it. And there was one person from each of our locations throughout the United States always on that culture committee. So kind of from a grassroots perspective, we would make sure that person's super informed, and they would bring ideas, from a grassroots perspective, they bring ideas to the committee. And a lot of times we implement those ideas. So we kind of did it from I don't want to say the top down and the bottom up, because it is a challenge having multiple locations. And then honestly, I did a lot of traveling, and so did our owner and our senior leaders. And we would go to all of our locations and any time we'd go, that's definitely, this would be one of the major, I guess, talking points or education points and what, you know, what was to come on the horizon, and all from the what's in it for me perspective. And, we implemented things along the way that definitely helped the employee, the what's in it for me, with RX and paying $0. And, you know, so it was, it didn't, like I said, it didn't happen overnight, but it took some time to get there. But I would say getting people involved and being part of the solution or part of the creativity definitely helped.
Great, thanks.
So the next question we have is, I am new to the concept of self-funding. How do I get more in-depth information about what self-funding looks like and how it could look for our company?
Dave, I'm sure you have a toolkit.
Yeah, go to healthrosetta.org. And we definitely have some information there, as well as my book, which you can download for free. If you just go to healthrosetta.org and say, get the book, you can download the book free. The other thing that there's a good resource, there's the Self-Insured Institute of America, SIIA.org, and they are the trade association on self-funding. They have some pretty good materials up there on describing self-funding as well. And of course, the other thing that's very useful is just finding a benefits consultant that knows it. You know, they've lived it. And they can then, rather than having just generic information on it, they can describe it in the context of, oh, we're a, you know, family-owned manufacturer, or we're a law firm, or, you know, whatever it might be. So, you know, there's, you can definitely contact us if you want to link to folks that are in your area of expertise, geography, industry, and so on. So yeah, there's some good resources there.
I will also say, one thing that I forgot to mention is we would start this immersion right away from, again, the recruiting standpoint. We would talk about it because, you know, what we do, some of the unique culture benefits to Palmer Johnson. We would talk about this in the recruitment process, but we'd also talk about it in the onboarding process. So I would actually personally go through with any employee that started at Palmer Johnson, you know, we did it in tiers, but or groups, and I would go through, I have a, had a 40-page deck all about our benefits and the what's in it for me and the programs, you know, the transparency tool, condition management, the wellness-based model, everything, that first week that someone would start, so that we were setting that foundation right away. And we did have a slide on why self-funded, and it would give the difference between self-funded and a fully insured plan. And it was broken down into three things: the plan design itself, the employer responsibilities, and the cost components of it. And it was a nice slide to just show. So
great. Awesome. Ellen, next question.
Yeah, so did you run into any challenges getting access to the data you needed?
When we were at the wrong TPA, absolutely. the reporting was not great. It was outdated, and it felt like and looked like it was in the 70s. As soon as we moved to the, I would say the super TPA, I think is what they're called. They're considered a super TPA. We did not have that challenge. I mean, we had everything right at our fingertips. So we knew our top 10 health conditions at any point in time. We knew what was trending positively and where we may have issues a year down the road for forecasting. We knew what was decreasing and what, you know, the programs that we were implementing and how it made a difference. We could correlate that with our claims. So, it was just having the right TPA.
And when you made the transition from fully insured to self-insured, a lot of times the previous carriers are not helpful about sharing information. So did you go through some questionnaire, you know, anonymized questionnaire to be able to assess where you're at?
Exactly what we did, because the carrier was not helpful, just like you said, right? Going from fully insured, we really couldn't get anything. So that's exactly what we did. We did questionnaires. Gosh, it feels like forever ago, but that's exactly what we did to try and get at least a gauge that we weren't just jumping off a bridge blind, that we had some data. But the broker was, our broker was helpful with, you know, really helpful with that.
Cool.
Awesome.
Ellen?
So how do you suggest an executive can get HR on board if they're facing any pushback?
Say that one more time. Executive getting HR on board?
Yeah. How would you suggest to get HR on board if you're facing some pushback from them?
Because sometimes it's HR trying to convince the executives, but, you know, there's other times where it's, in fact, a lot of what we see is some senior leader, a CFO, a CEO, owner says, like, we're going to go bankrupt, you know, if we don't address this. And maybe the HR leader is reluctant. You know, they become comfortable with whatever, even though it underperforms, it's what they know. There's a little bit of Stockholm syndrome that happens there. Any thoughts on, you know, obviously you had a supportive exec and you were on board, but let's say somebody wasn't as on board that had been in your role and Craig said, yeah, let's make this happen. And they were like,
I mean, I hate to say this, but if the HR person is not on board and this is the route you're going to go and what's best for the company, you might not have the right HR person, you know, or you need to maybe heavily rely on that broker a little bit more if your HR person isn't going to necessarily maybe buy in. But you, I mean, the HR department, in my view, in my opinion, you have to have HR on board for it to be super successful to implement a lot of changes, you know, that are going to come going from a fully insured to self-funded plan. So I think it's wrapping your arms around that HR person and asking them, what are your biggest fears? And let's talk through this and why. And, you know, have that direct, honest conversation. And then, you know, it's the CEO, CFO educating is like, hey, here's what great looks like. This is where we want to go, you know, and we really need your buy-in and support on how we're going to, you know, in order to get here.
Yeah, I'd add a couple thoughts too that the HR is not going to get on board unless they believe the CEO has their back. Because there will be some bumps, there'll be some questions. People are used to having, you know, an insurance card that looks a certain way, and you may be changing that. And so that coupled with resources, you know, here you have something that's the second or third biggest cost to a lot of organizations, and it's kind of an afterthought. I mean, you were mentioning earlier where you are actually, you know, doing quite a bit of work where it was 40% of your job. Well, not every HR department is staffed that way. And so I think if the execs want HR on board, they need to say, look, this is a major cost item. We're playing to win like we do in any other area. We need to bring the right resources, not a, you know, number of people or FTEs, but the type of people and the skill sets that they have, and invest in their education. Maybe they need to go get a certification in self-funding or something like that, that they can learn about it so that they're well prepared. And, you know, actually the number one retention mechanism that studies show isn't pay. It's actually some indicators around a company is investing like in the education and advancement of the person. And so that's an area where like, this is going to be the way we do it for like the rest of our lives. It's like somebody, you know, you go on a crash diet or you could say, this is my lifestyle for the rest of my life. And so we're going to make that investment. So just a couple additional thoughts.
Yeah, very well said. I think that education piece will be, is a great addition because, a lot of times people just don't know what you don't know, what you don't know, and it's the fear of the unknown. So I definitely agree with you.
Great. Next question, Ellen.
That's the end of our questions. So perfect timing.
Good timing. Okay.
if you guys have any kind of final points or messages to make, feel free.
Well, I have another question, kind of a final, maybe a way for Tara to make her final point. Because you're unique in that you've left the role we were just talking about, And what do you feel is like your legacy? What's different because you had been at Palmer Johnson as opposed to somebody else, you know, related to the benefits area? What are the things that you're real happy about that you left behind? And you know, it's not like a train wreck, you know, now that you've left.
Oh, man. Gosh, that's such a great question. I think the fact that they are sustaining everything that I help create is super cool. The fact that they're still trending positively is amazing. I still have people reach out to me just to see how I'm doing, and you know, that feel good. I have to read you this one thing, and I just got it yesterday, so let me just pull it up because I think this will kind of help. So when I left Palmer Johnson, it was super emotional because I had invested a lot of time and energy and resources and love the owner and love the, you know, you get to know the employees so well and their families. And Craig Parsons, our owner, he sent out a really nice message, and this I got this yesterday. Long story, I won't tell you, but this is what he said. He said, when Tara bravely walks out the door later today, she leaves behind a true masterpiece. She took full advantage using her talent and passion to fight for all of us to make PJ a better place to spend a huge chunk of your day, year, and life. Tara has made us healthier, happier, and has fought to ensure every dollar we spend on benefits is money well spent, and we have data to prove this. I know how much she appreciates you all for giving her ideas a go, for being open-minded, for participating, for getting out of your comfort zone, for listening and learning. Without your support and willingness to change, none of this works. I mean,
well, you can't ask for much more than that. That's amazing. Glad I teed
that.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's really awesome. And the thing that, I mean, I think Tara's the living embodiment of this. But what I would say is kind of a parting comment on this is it's really exciting to see the nature of open collaboration that's going on, and that even the best that have done the most work and had the most success, frankly, are the most humble about they want to do more, but they're really happy to learn from others. And there's this, we sometimes talk about, you know, give one, get 10, where people are sharing these ideas. They're very open to it. They know that when they share their ideas, they actually get ideas too. But even if they don't, you know, they love to have that big impact. And so certainly don't be hesitant to reach out to us. We're happy to connect you with people. You know, the folks that we have sort of in our community, we have really filtered for three things: mission alignment, they're givers, and there's doers, and they're giver and doers. You know, there's a lot of people who want to hold their ideas tight, and to me, that's silly, particularly given the impact that it can have on people's health. It would be like practically holding back the cure for cancer, given the health impact. And then doers. There's a lot of talkers in our industry. I mean, we were talking about wellness earlier, and you said you didn't like that term, and it's unfortunately it's been kind of bastardized. I mean, wellness itself, who can argue with that? I think a lot of people have adopted well-being. That may get tainted by it, but bottom line, really true wellness or well-being is great. So appreciate everybody joining the webinar, especially appreciate Tara for investing her time. And she's off on a well-deserved vacation after this. So I don't want to hold her back from that. So thanks again for participating, Tara.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you all. And if anyone has follow-up questions, I'm always open to share thoughts, resources, ideas, collaborate. So you guys, Dave or Ellen, feel free to share my email as well.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again. And look forward to the follow-up from everybody. And have a great trip, Tara.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.